Hello, and thank you for joining us to this special ILTA LegalSec podcast on shell shock. My name is Bill Kyrus. I'm the Senior Manager with Information Security and Governance at Bingham McCutcheon in Boston.
And this is Jamie Herman. I am the Manager of Information Security at Ropes & Gray.
So early last week, security researchers identified serious flaws in the bash shell that can result in arbitrary code execution. This is basically, people are seeing this as more severe than the Heartbleed vulnerability we've talked about in the past. So we'll get into a little bit of detail here on what the vulnerability is and what you can do about it.
Just to add to that, bash, for those that aren't familiar, is a command line application for Linux and Unix. Been described as, I think, on the internet as affecting everything from a light bulb to network environments. But essentially, you know, the reason it's been so high profile is there's so many variables within the bash shell, listing directories, utilities you could use, home directories you can access of current users logged in, and it just bash doesn't limit environment variable execution in the command shell. So it's pretty dangerous for someone to have access to this.
If you're from a Microsoft-centric shop, I mean, you can think of the bash shell as analogous to the command line shell when you're in Windows and you can go to a command prompt. Bash is default on many different Unix and Linux platforms. That's why it's so common and why there's so much attention to this in not just the security media, but the media in general. This vulnerability has been around for possibly as long as 20 years. We're assuming that it's always been there, but it only been recently discovered. The bash code, the relevant bash code, was put into place in 1994. So any Unix and Linux distribution running bash are potentially vulnerable, but in particular, anything that's running a web server with CGI and any Linux clients. If you're using a Linux or Unix operating system as a client endpoint, they can even be attacked with rogue DHCP. Another point of concern in a Microsoft-centric shop is if you're using Cygwin or any other Unix emulation, you might not think it's common, but do check your inventory because there are vulnerable versions of Cygwin that are impacted.
Yeah, so just to for those of you that aren't familiar with CGI, that actually stands for Common Gateway Interface. It's regularly talked about with a lot of the vulnerabilities that we certainly cover and that impact a lot of the firms and legal departments listening to this. The standard for a gateway or interface between clients and web servers, and it allows interaction between them transparent and smooth. Web pages are static, HTML, sometimes messy, but readable text files nonetheless. CGIs are scripts, small programs. They allow you to make your web pages dynamic and add all kinds of fun things to do to them. The CGI program script can be written in multitude of languages that allow it to be executed on the system, and it just depends what you have available on your system. They're usually located in a specific folder on your web server, and they're not only shell scripts, so you might have a specific source folder, and this varies. So this is why this has always been the predominant attack vector for these web applications, and when we say something's vulnerable from a public-facing site or what have you. So just to add some color on that, as far as other systems impacted, certainly Macs. I don't know how many Mac users there are at memberships, firms, and legal departments, but certainly anyone that's using it at home or anything like that, there are patches out from Mac. Supposedly it hasn't patched all six of the vulnerabilities, which Bill will get into. I believe it patched at least two to four of them, but keep an eye on that. Another vector is a SIP vector, SIP proxies. Those of you that manage or are involved in managing your telecom platforms at your office, make sure that you review this, vulnerability scan it, make sure anything public-facing is certainly addressed and certainly anything internal. And just keep in mind that there's hundreds of millions of devices out there, the good old Internet of Things, and there's so many unknown attack vectors aside from the known attack vectors. And there's a significant amount of creativity that can be used to exploit this bug, hence, you know, the catastrophic label that's been tagged to the bash shell.
And we can't emphasize enough how critical it is to attack anything running a Unix Linux operating system with a web server because they can be exploited with no authentication by just sending a malformed URL to a system that's running the vulnerable version of Bash and also running CGI, the machine can be taken over, you know, with no authentication. You know, it's all too easy to get it done. Now, if you're a Microsoft-centric law firm, your big points of vulnerability are probably not your Windows servers, but any hardware or virtual appliances you have that are running Linux or Linux-related operating systems under the hood. Again, this, when you think back to Heartbleed and you scanned your networks and you were finding things like WAN optimization appliances or firewall management servers or even video conferencing equipment that were vulnerable to Heartbleed, these are the kinds of systems that may also be vulnerable to shell shock.
Yeah, it's a great point. I think, you know, we went through a really healthy exercise during the Heartbleed fallout or response, if you will, and it was to really do a comprehensive asset inventory of devices that potentially used OpenSSL at the time, even if it was just a different version. But we tried to identify everything, and I think a lot of firms and organizations did this. It was a healthy exercise. The difference between that and this, hopefully we're leveraging those lists. Hopefully we've already had those conversations with the different business units, whether it's facilities, network team, infrastructure. Make sure you're having these calls. Make sure you're referring back to that list if you had it. If you hadn't created it at that time, create one. It's going to be a lot easier because this is probably, well, this definitely isn't the first, and this probably won't be the last time we have a similar podcast to this to address a major vulnerability. I think the one thing that we want to be sure is, as we go through this process each time, we're a little bit better at reacting to it and we're a little bit more prepared.
So as we said at the outset, this is more than just one vulnerability. There are actually six that are presently associated with shell shock. Now, there's an industry standard known as CVE for common vulnerabilities and exposures for everyone to be on the same page about, you know, given computer vulnerabilities. All of the six that are presently known for shell shock begin with CVE-2014, and then the six that you need to take note of are 6271, 7169, 6278, 6277, 7186, and 7187. Now, the first one that came out was 6271, and the second one came out about 24 hours later, but then the following four actually came out a few days after that. There will likely be more. Thinking about the Heartbleed vulnerability, that when that came out, that, you know, there was a lot of attention drawn to it, but ultimately that was a vulnerability in the OpenSSL platform. Since Heartbleed came out, there are something on the order of 20 known vulnerabilities to OpenSSL. They didn't all make the news, but, you know, if you look at your vulnerability management platform and other resources, you want to stay on top of this and make sure that your vendors are providing patches for all of the vulnerabilities, not just the first one. So even by the time you hear this, there may be more than the six I just listed with shell shock.
It's a great point. You know, one of the other things to consider is big significant difference between Heartbleed and the shell shock as it's now known. Heartbleed, when people are grabbing 64K chunks of memory off of that SSL session, it was randomized as to what they got. It was literally luck of the draw, whether it was useful or not, or whether it could be, you know, aggregated to form something, a certificate or credentials or anything. Once you patched it, reissued it, revoked and reissued a certificate, you seem to be okay. The big problem with shell shock here is once someone gains access and elevates to a privileged user account or user directory within the Bash shell, if you patch it and they already have access to your network where they're telling that system to communicate out to one of their other systems to remotely manage it, that patch does not close that gap. It does not close that hole. So Bill will get into a little bit more when we get to the takeaways here. Something to be aware of is your IDS, your IPS, if you have a managed security provider, your firewall rules, these are all huge, huge things that you need to be on top of, not just the scanning and the patching, because you want to make sure that if some data is being exfiltrated or if there's some nefarious traffic going on your network, patching it does not stop that from happening. So I just wanted to be clear there before we moved on that there's kind of multiple pieces here. With Heartbleed, it was more of a identify, remediate, move on. This is more of identify, remediate, continuous remediation. And I think, you know, for the next few weeks at least, people should be focusing significant resources on managing the releasing vulnerabilities, the patching, and certainly the management of traffic and data flow between devices and servers on your network.
Excellent point. I would also add that even if a given system has only patched for some of the vulnerabilities but not the others, there may be other mitigating circumstances. For example, I can think of one device in my network where they patched Shellshock within hours after the news getting out, and that was great, but then I said, well, what about these other vulnerabilities? It was a situation where you could only exploit them if you had authentication to the device, you were actually logged on with a command prompt. It wasn't something that could be remotely executed.
Well, I was going to say one last point to make before we move on is with regards to management of patches. I think something that we've certainly found in working with different vendors is there's some vendors that will patch the platform itself, the underlying OS, and there's some vendors that require or offload the management of that to you. So this goes back to, again, that communication between different business units, different IS or IT groups. Make sure if someone says it's, you know, they're going to reach out to a vendor and check if it's vulnerable, and they come back and say the vendor said it's all clear on their end, make sure that what all clear means is either they patched it or they patched everything or they're continuing to investigate it, or it doesn't mean it's clear on our end, but as far as what you're responsible for, we can't comment on that. So just make sure that, you know, this is one of those things that you don't want to get lost in the details of who owns what device and who manages which application, because we just want to make sure, because it's continuously developing, that we give it the appropriate attention in the proper way throughout this process.
So in terms of where to focus within a law firm environment, our ILTA friends at Kelly Dry have set up a list of vendors common to law firms, so you can see what the latest information people have on vulnerabilities, whether there are any on a given application, what the state of patching is, if there are any outstanding. So it's really, you know, crowdsourcing the response in the ILTA community. This page is secured, and in order to get access to it, I want to draw your attention to the LegalSec eGroup or listserv. There's a message from Judy Flournoy that describes how to request access to that site. So please go to the LegalSec page for additional information, and you can help contribute as well if you have information about a system that's not on that list.
Yep, and as far as, you know, additional information, if it's not listed there or if you're doing your own research, reach out to your vendors. Have each group that owns specific assets reach out to their vendors. Again, don't just look at the big critical systems. Look at everything, whether it's phone systems, whether it's switches, teleconference equipment, anything related to that. Make sure the vendors are contacted. You could get KB articles referring you to check for regular updates, and just make sure it's a comprehensive process in looking for what's out, what's being investigated, and just keep that documented to the best of your ability.
So if you have a vulnerability management platform in your environment, now's the time to get on top of it if you're not already. You want to update any routine reports that you have to include all of the CVEs I listed earlier and any additional CVEs that are published. Take note that there may be prepackaged reports and dashboards, but make sure that if they're not dynamically updated, that, you know, you can update them manually or whatever feed you need to get from the vendor so that you're on top of the Shellshock vulnerability list as it grows, so it can automatically report to you anything that you pick up in your environment. If you don't presently have a vulnerability management system in your network, now is a fantastic time to get one. Even if you don't have any immediate plans, go out and get an evaluation license. If you want some vendors to look at, there was a LegalSec Summit 2014 presentation on vulnerability management, and one of the last couple of slides is a list of vendors that you could consider. There are plenty of great solutions out there, and this is the type of situation where they really, you know, earn their money, because it can be so easy to just turn to this database that already knows everything about your network, and then get the latest information on not just the vulnerabilities, but do you have SigWin in your environment? Maybe there was a server that someone set up from a legacy firm that you forgot about, and it's running SigWin. I wonder why I say that, sounding like I have experience. It's a fantastic way to stay on top of things. There are one-off tools from some vendors. I saw some security vendors have published individual tools to scan. But I think the vulnerability products are going to be a little more robust because there are multiple ways to probe for Shellshock vulnerabilities. So I don't know that I would use one of these one-off applications.
It's great. Just to add to what Bill said, I think as far as the security vendors go, another thing I've seen several really good security consulting organizations out there, and I won't name any specifically, but a lot of them are offering a service, a paid service. If you don't have the resources, or you don't have a tool, or you don't think you can select the right tool in a reasonable amount of time, you could bring them in to do actual scans on your environment and look through all your systems. You certainly, as far as takeaways, focus on your internet-facing systems first. That's absolute mission critical. Patch and continue patching. Don't just patch it once and leave it alone. Continue to move through that process and make sure that you understand what system has been patched and when against what vulnerabilities. For end-of-life products, set a static address. There's other mitigating controls for known attack vectors. You just have to research that specific product. Again, Bill referenced crowdsourcing. If there's a product or something you're not sure of, search around on the internet. Certainly post something to the ILTA forums. Make sure that dialogue's going between firms and we can help each other out. Over and over, we keep talking about, vulnerability scanning. You could verify this, and you should verify this after you patch a system. This will be easier for some versus others. But most sites you search for executing a bash shell command, pretty straightforward just to verify if it's patched, what version it's running. I know Apple released some of the help commands for people to test it on a Mac. So certainly where possible, verify after you patch it to make sure that it's vulnerable or it's not vulnerable anymore. There's several different shells, C shell, K shell. They might be vulnerable too. No one's talked about it yet. Don't be surprised down the road if you hear more information about that. Make sure we're focused at the moment on what we're trying to patch and remediate as far as all these vulnerabilities go.
Jamie, just to interject before.
What's that?
I'm sorry, to interject on the test. I mean, Jamie's right. It's so easy to test. Definitely be careful of the sources you consult with on what are some test commands to see if you're vulnerable. If you scour Twitter or even some blogs, you'll find people trolling you and providing some scripts that won't just test if you're vulnerable, it'll actually do harmful things. So, use a reliable source you can trust before you run any kind of test script on a Linux prompt.
Yeah, no, that's a great addition there, Bill. And the only other thing before we go on to kind of, wrap up and how you could keep in the loop that I wanted to just reiterate is, over the next few weeks, don't patch and leave these systems alone. This is going to take up a lot of everyone's time, rightfully so, and just stay on top of it. There'll probably continue to be information emerging into the next week. There'll probably be more after that, but hopefully the exploitable vulnerabilities are identified, in the next 4 or 5 days in entirety, and we can get the patches released and patches updated. You don't want to go through this exercise and do 50% of the work in patching it and just assume and tell the firm or the organization that we're clean, we're covered, something happens down the road and you have a difficult situation to deal with. So make sure you give it the appropriate attention. This is going to be something that nags at you for the next few weeks, and just focus on it as much as possible. Offload where possible through the other teams. Leverage your other groups and resources in the firm and just let them help you through this process.
So some other takeaways, ensure that your IDS, IPS definitions are up to date, whether it's at the perimeter, on firewall, or dedicated IDS appliances or services, not to mention make sure that they're not vulnerable themselves. Also, don't depend on auto update. You may have virtual or physical appliances that are supposed to automatically update. You want to make sure that that's actually happening. I can think of a system in my environment that when we checked it out, it wasn't automatically getting the shell shock patch, and we needed to engage tech support. So ensure that your firewall is up to date with any of its definition, any detections associated with this vulnerability. And I think that's about it. Anything else you want to cover, Jamie?
No, I think that's it. Again, there's so much information out there, very similar to other major stories or vulnerabilities that get released. Just can't stress enough. Leverage the big vendors out there for vulnerability scanning, Nexpose, Qualys, Nessus. Leverage these sites. Leverage public forums. Leverage the ILTA forums, the ILTA Twitter account, and just the legal sec boards, and Bill go into some of the other stuff. But just stay on top of this as much as possible. If you have conflicting information, you're not sure, just reach out to someone, post something on the on LegalSec forum just to kind of ask a question, send an email to the group, and let's just make sure that we all work collectively to get better at these you know, critical vulnerability patching exercises that we seem to go through fairly regularly now.
All right, so to stay informed, as Jamie alluded to, there are some fantastic Twitter feeds to keep in touch with. There is a LegalSec Twitter feed as well as the SANS Institute, and the isc.sans.edu is a great site to visit on a regular basis. But incidentally, Shellshock was all over Twitter about 12 to 24 hours before this started making appearances in other media. So I do strongly recommend using Twitter to get the latest security news. U.S. CERT website as well. As we talked about, please check out the Kelly Dry Office 365 vendor list. Only one person per firm is allowed to access it, so see Judy Flournoy's message on how to have a rep sign up to access the site.
Yep.
So that'll do it.
Yeah, and I think as today is the 1st of October and the kickoff of National Cybersecurity Awareness Month, this is great timing to hopefully everyone will continue to keep everything safe and secure. And if there's any questions, hopefully we could facilitate this through the forums on the Ilton LegalSec boards.
Absolutely. If anyone has any follow-up questions to this, please check in with us on the LegalSec board. And we thank you all for joining us.
Have a great one.